Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host, and I'd like to give some gratitude out to Don Newsom at VBS Radio and Seth for giving us this great platform to raise consciousness with positive media and Hollywood, which is what I believe Hollywood is for. I have a guest tonight that I've been very excited to have with me for, a long time, maybe a year. His name is Jack Canfield. I'm sure he's no stranger to any of you listeners out there. His website is www.jackcanfield.com. That's www.jackcanfield.com. And he is the beloved originator of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and he's fostered the emergence of inspirational anthologies as a genre and watched it grow to a billion-dollar market as the driving force behind this development and delivery of over 100 million books sold through the Chicken Soup of the Soul franchise. Jack Canfield is uniquely qualified to talk about success. Behind the empire, Time Magazine, called the publishing phenomenon of the decade, is America's leading expert in creating peak performance for entrepreneurs, corporate leaders, managers, sales professionals, corporate employees, and educators. I personally can add to that actors and the entertainment industry. He is a compelling, empowering, and compassionate coach who for the past 30 years has helped hundreds of thousands of individuals achieve their dreams. Affectionately known as America's number one success coach, Jack has studied and reported on what makes successful people different. He knows what motivates them, what drives them, and what inspires them. He brings this critical insight to countless audiences internationally, sharing his success strategies in the media with companies, universities, and professional associations in over 20 countries around the world. Without further ado, I'd like for all of you to help me honor Jack Canfield. Hello, Jack.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kate.
You're welcome. Thanks for making time to be on the show.
My pleasure.
I have so many things that I'd like to talk about. Number one, I'll just give you a little bit of background on the past almost 3 years of my life. I spent walking with my iPod, listening to all of your books on tape and books on CD, most of all the Success Principles, and I find that you and I have a great deal in common about our upbringing and the kinds of challenges that we had as we were children and finding our way. And I know that an alchemist is someone who can take something very challenging, unpleasant, and hard to deal with, and turn it into something good that can help millions. And I believe that that's what you've done, and I believe that's why it speaks to the heart of every person who hears what you have to say. And I just want to thank you for that, Jack.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, it's really a wonderful program that you have, many programs that you have. And I know that you have several websites that are helpful to people. You have jackcanfield.com, thesuccessprinciples.com, askjackcanfield.com, studywithjack.com, and you have also a free service that, you know, are tips from you that if people will sign up, they can jumpstart their lives and start making more money and having more fun and more joy in their lives. And I'm just wondering what specifically inspired you to write the Success Principles.
Well, you know, it all starts back in 1968, believe it or not. I was sitting in a laundromat in graduate school in Chicago, and this guy comes up to me. You know, you go to a laundromat, you're reading a book, minding your own business, and waiting for your clothes to dry, and this guy says, put your book down, talk to me. So I did. Turns out he was a fellow doctoral student. He was in economics. I was in education. And we really liked each other a lot. He had his own radio show. He was a jazz aficionado in Chicago and was a really cool guy. And said, I want you to go to this Living Philosopher series with me up at this other college. And so I went with him one night, and there was this amazing speaker by the name of Herbert Otto. He was from Los Angeles, and he was running something called the Human Potential Institute. And he gave a speech, and I went up afterwards and said, this is the most amazing speech I've ever heard, because he was saying we're only using 10% of our potential. And, you know, I want to use all of mine, right?
Right.
So I said, what do I do? You know, you're going back to L.A. I'm a graduate student here. He said, well, there's this thing called the W. Clement and Jesse B. Stone Foundation. And W. Clement Stone was a self-made multimillionaire worth about $600 million back in 1968, so that would be a billionaire today by today's inflation. And so I went down to Stone's Foundation, started taking workshops, And here was this teacher. I was teaching high school at the time. I was in graduate school also, and I wasn't making very much money. And I was living in an apartment that cost me half my month's income. And there was many nights when I had these 11-cent dinners. You know, it was a 10-cent can of tomato paste, some water, some garlic salt, and 11 cents worth of spaghetti noodles. And that would be my dinner. So I knew what it was like to be on the down and out. But when I met Napoleon Hill, I mean, W. Clement Stone, who was a friend of Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich, he taught me these principles of success, many of which I still teach today, and I've learned a lot more since then. I started applying them to my life. And in just a couple of years, I went from making $8,000 a year to almost $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. This was a phenomenal switch for me. And my wife at the time said, well, if it works for $100,000, you think it'll work for $1 million. So we applied these principles again, and sure enough, within a few years, we were making $1 million a year. And, you know, this is a little Jackie Canfield from Wheeling, West Virginia, who had, you know, dysfunctional parents and alcoholic, workaholic parents. And my dad was abusive, you know, used to more than spank me. And so all of a sudden, here I am, and I graduated in half of the class that made the top half possible, I always say. And here I was doing really, really, really well. And so I thought, wow, I want to teach these principles in my high school classes. So I started teaching them there, and then pretty soon they said, well, would you teach the other teachers what you're doing, because your kids are all getting better grades and they're not dropping out of school. And so I did that. And eventually, you know, we did the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And what happened was I was at a place in my life where I knew that the principles I was living my life by worked. I taught them to hundreds of thousands of students around the world, but I've never really written about them. You know, people only knew me for Chicken Soup for the Soul. So I thought I would put them in a book. And what I was really trying to do was to kind of end that chapter of my life, you know, the success-oriented, make money, be impactful in the world, and really move into a more inner spiritual dimension, which is what I wanted to focus on, more on love and compassion and spirituality and meditation. So I thought if I write this book, I'll get all that stuff that I know out of my system, and I can move on to this next level. Well, obviously, the opposite happened. Everyone loved the book and started asking me to speak everywhere about it, so I've spent the last about 3.5 years now just focusing on teaching these principles in corporations, and I've been in 31 countries teaching them, and on television we did a PBS special around this, and so on and so forth. But it really came from the place of looking at all these people had read all these books and they still weren't successful. They had read the 7 Habits of This and the 6 Keys of That and the 10 Steps to Success, and I knew all of my students were being successful. So I said, okay, let's put it in a book and let's share what I know, because I know it works. And that's what I did. It took me 18 months to write that book. And toward the end, I was working, you know, 18-hour days. And I remember many mornings waking up or just working. And then I'd hear the birds singing outside. And I'd go, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I've stayed up all night again. And the sun was coming up. But I was so passionate about this project that I just, it was kind of my magnus opus, you know, that where you put everything you have into one thing. And hopefully it's been what I wanted it to be, which is one-stop shopping for everything you need to know about taking your life to where you want it to go.
I think that the passion that you put into this book is definitely something that everyone feels when they open it and read it. I mean, I can speak for myself, and I can speak for everybody that I've spoken to about your work, which, you know, part of what I do as a life coach, and I use a lot of what you say, and I send people to get your products all the time because they're very, very helpful. And as I mentioned, I've been immersing myself in the success principles for the past 3 years as I just really was intent on getting over some hurdles in my life that I just couldn't seem to get over. So I applied these principles, and I overcame those hurdles and more. So, you know, I'm very grateful to have those products on hand that I can call to, because, you know, the kind of book that you need in the world for yourself to help you understand what's going on in your life and help you achieve the things that's in your heart. If that book is not out there and you can't find that book, then I think we need to write that book. And you wrote that book. And I believe that all the passion you poured into it and all the work you put into it pays off constantly. And, you know, I just am so inspired when someone does something like that, because it's a calling that you cannot ignore, and a momentum that can't be stopped. It just must be born. And I think if we heard a voice of every person that you've moved, touched, and inspired with the work that you're doing, it would be nonstop chatter. I don't know if you've seen that movie, Bruce Almighty, where the prayers come in email, and they don't stop, and the post-its are all over the place,
yep.
Every post-it being a prayer and a thank you. you would have that because, you know, you were fearless about overcoming any thoughts about yourself that were pre-programmed in you by your environment. And for me personally, one of my greatest challenges in life was learning to love myself and see myself worthy of abundance. And that's not just a moment-by-moment process. That's a heartbeat-by-heartbeat process. It's very challenging to learn to love yourself to the degree that you feel worthy of abundance. And that's what it takes to have abundance. And for you to jump over that hurdle coming from where you come from is a great inspiration for us all.
No,
and, you know, there are a lot of people out there who don't necessarily talk about it, but who were raised in similar ways to the way that you were. And what you've done with that is what's helping people to find their power and their strength and do it also.
No, it's true. You know, it's funny. Today I was on a call with there's a man I call him about once a year, and we do a little reading. And he, for lack of a better word, he would not call it channeling, but he says that he has these guides that talk to my soul, and they, I ask questions, and they translate. But I was asking him about my life because I just, you know, just kind of sold one of my major companies that I have, and I was kind of a little bit in the, like when an actor's between roles and you don't quite know what you're doing next, and
right,
you've lost that one role you identified with for maybe 22 weeks or whatever, and now you don't know when the next one's coming. And
mm-hmm.
I'm in that kind of space of, like, what do I really focus on next? And I always have my speaking and my seminars, but I was looking for that big thing, the passionate thing, like Chicken Soup for the Soul was, or when we did The Secret and so forth, and I wasn't finding it. And he said to me, he said, you know, what happens is that you've climbed to the top of the staircase, and you're looking up at the moment, and there's no next step. He said, stop for a minute. Look back. Look down the staircase and realize how far you've come. Appreciate everything you've done. Appreciate all the lives you've touched. Appreciate all the people you've empowered and inspired and opened their hearts and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you're like a general who's won the war, but all the reports aren't in from all the fronts, so you're not sure you've really won it yet. He said, it's time to celebrate.
Yeah.
And to really take some time and appreciate what you've done,
mm-hmm.
and to really celebrate your success. And I think so many of us are, and it's me too, I mean, I'm right here doing it, and it's like not slowing down enough to really savor
mm-hmm.
our life, not just smell the roses, but really appreciate what you have done and who you are and what you bring to the world. And so self-love is the key. It really
mm-hmm.
is. You know, when you can get rid of fear and you love yourself enough to really listen to your own inner guidance, and trust that what you're being attracted to. You know, so many people, when they see The Secret and they look at the law of attraction, they think it's all about attracting to you the things you want, the car, the job, the role, the screenplay that gets, you know, taken and made into a movie, etc. But what's also important is to notice what you're attracted to. You know, what am I being drawn toward? Where is my natural inclination? Who do I want to hang out with? Who am I attracted to? What books do I want to read? What music do I love? Where do I want to vacation? And to really trust that your inspirations, your intuition, your attractions are taking you where you need to go. And often it doesn't match our rational mind at all. But when you honor yourself and trust yourself and love yourself enough to feel your feelings and to trust your desires and wants, not judge them, and really allow yourself to pursue your dreams, life gets very magical. And so
yes, it does.
But it's a constant struggle. You know, it's not something you just conquer once and you're done.
It's not for the faint of heart, I can tell you that. And living life fully is a very courageous thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, the best way to do it is learn to love yourself moment by moment. And, you know, one thing that I've encountered, Jack, with honoring myself, and I know that there's a book called Honoring the Self, and as I was reading that, I was finding that I've been doing all those things, one way or the other, my whole life, in the face of all kinds of adversity. And I realized that why I was receiving so much conflict around honoring myself is because most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand the language of honoring themselves. So when they run into people who honor themselves, they're not quite sure what to do about that or with that. And what you've done with teaching people to honor themselves is you've made it palatable for the masses. You know, it's not daunting to people the way that you've put it. And I do believe in channeling, because when we're connected to source, we become sorcerers and sorceresses. And being connected to source, in my opinion, is the greatest example of genius. I don't believe it's academia. I believe it's how connected to source you are. Because when you're connected to source in the way that gives you the bliss and the joy and the uncaused joy in your life that draws you forward and gives you that passion to write those books and develop those programs and live life fully and love yourself. It's that kind of life force, that source, and that's what I believe you've channeled a way for the masses to understand, that honoring the self is the only way we can be an instrument to God or higher power or creator or whatever anyone wants to call that connection, that divinity. The only way we can be an instrument to God is when we do honor ourselves and when we do value ourselves, and we can't have abundance without it. And you've done a remarkable job of translating that into a way that makes people excited about it instead of fearful of it.
Well, if I have a gift, it's taking spiritual and mystical and metaphysical and transpersonal principles and being able to write about them in a way that, as you said, the masses can relate to it. And for whatever reason, that's...
Well, that's what I call an alchemist.
Well, I'll accept that.
Yes, and it's wonderful, and it's very inspiring. And, you know, I happen to know personally that your work has caused a lot of even my clients who are actors to get outside of their limitations. And, you know, when we look for obstacles, we'll always find them. And to help them to start taking a YOU turn instead of looking for something to stumble over. Because, you know, it is our natural state to have abundance. And the only reason we don't have it is when we pinch it off somehow. And then when we go looking for what's pinching it off, then we can figure out, well, do I want to keep pinching that off or do I want to let go of that and see what happens? And that's when life gets really fun, is when you stop pinching off that abundance and flow. So with that in mind, what would you say to our listeners, Jack, about people who are really honoring themselves and their families don't understand, their coworkers, their loved ones, people of all sorts in their life who aren't supportive and really want to pull them back into that family structure and that family system, as dysfunctional as it is? They want to pull them back into that because they're not understanding this transformation their loved one is going through, and it's very threatening to them. What would you say to the listeners out there who are going through that quantum leap and transformation for themselves, and they're feeling like their whole life has abandoned them because of it? Everyone important to them has abandoned them because of it. What would you say?
Well, the main thing, since you're using the word abandon, is not to abandon yourself, and to know that as we go through journeys. I mean, I look back over all the transitions I've gone through, and in every situation there's some friends who've stayed along and some friends who've dropped away. You think about who you hung out with in high school, it's probably not who you're hanging out with today. Most of us are still not in touch with our college buddies, although some of us are. You know, the first jobs we had, maybe we started out, I started out as a high school history teacher. I'm not in touch with any of the people I knew in Chicago back then, or any of the teachers I taught with. But as I move through my life, you know, new friends come in and old friends fall away. So know that that may happen. Now, with family members, sometimes you are going to outgrow them. You know, my mother never really fully understood the work I did. And if anyone's ever tried to be a therapist to your own mother, you know how little that works.
Oh, yeah, I do.
And so the main thing is to really stay true to your own growth and trust that you'll attract to you the people that will support you in that growth. And you'll be attracted to groups, to jobs, to events, and so forth, where you'll meet the people that will work with you on that level. Now, I always say, we have a chapter in our book called Drop Out of the Ain't It Awful Club. And, you know, so many of us are hanging out with people who are negative. And often they're friends, colleagues, whatever. And they may have been appropriate for you at a certain stage of your life, but as you evolve, they may not be vibrating at that new level. And I have a friend named Jim Rohn, who's a motivational speaker who I love, and he says, you know, we're the average of the five people we spend the most time with. And if you take kids at school and you take them and their five best friends, take their grade point averages and average them out, it's pretty much going to be your grade point average. So we tend to hang with people at a similar vibrational level. Mm-hmm. And in order to move up, you've got to hang out with people that are a level higher than you. It's called moving on up. And I always say, you know, you can't move up 10 levels at once any more than you can go from making $10 an hour to $1 million an hour. You know, there's some steps in between. And the same is true with people. You don't go from hanging out with people on the street, you're on welfare, to hanging out with Bill Gates. But if you think about, I'm making $100,000 a year, I want to hang out with people that are making $200,000. Or I'm an actor, but I'm not working, I want to hang out with working actors. I want to get into that game of those people and that vibration, that set. Whatever it takes to do that. You know, you want to be hanging out with people that are more positive, that are more successful, that are making more money, that are spiritually more clear than you. And, you know, I always say if you want to be thin, hang out with thin people. Eat what they eat. Think the way they think. Go exercise the way they're exercising, you know, whatever it is. We had a kid that I write about in my book. His name was Tim Ferriss. He's got a best-selling book right now called The 4-Hour Workweek.
Oh, yeah, we love that one.
Yeah, it's been on the bestseller list for almost a year now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it came out in November of last year. And Tim was a mentee of mine. I actually mentored him when he was writing that book. And he's a sweet guy. And what happened for him when he was 12 years old, he was a street kid hanging on the street, getting into trouble. And someone left that message, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, on their answering machine at his house.
Mm.
To this day, nobody knows who it was. They can't recognize the voice. But anyway, he couldn't get it out of his mind. And he went to his mom and his dad. He said, look, I'm sitting here, and the reality is I'm thinking that if I'm the average of the five people I'm spending the most time with, I'm in trouble. And he said, I think I need to get a better class of friends, and they're not to be had in our neighborhood or the public school I'm going to. If I get a summer job, will you chip in the other part and help me get a scholarship? I want to go to a private school. So long story short, he gets into St. Paul's. He goes to this private school, spends his senior year or junior year abroad in Japan, studying kickboxing and Aikido and jiu-jitsu, ends up at Princeton University on the wrestling team, and at 23 starts his own company and is making $65,000 a month. And that's when he decided to write the 4-Hour Workweek, because he was running this, to him, $65,000 a month at the age of 23 company on 4 hours a week, because he turned it all into a virtual company on the Internet. So the idea was he got himself into the right group of people. It absolutely changed his life. So it's not that you have to let go and kick out all your old friends, but you may need to add some friends. And if the friends that you have now are not supposed to be there, they'll fall away. And if parents are, you know, people that you can't get away from because you're going to, you know, reunions and so forth, and you got to go home for Christmas kind of thing.
Yep.
Just don't engage in those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do something else.
Right.
Walk away from that conversation. Watch TV. You know, watch a football game. Go out to a movie with them. Throw some basketballs, whatever. Just don't let them rain on your parade. And remember, I teach this little formula, E plus R equals O. It says events plus response equal your outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to say to you, you know, Kate, I've been on a million radio shows, and I think you're the biggest jerk and idiot I ever met. Most people will go, wow, he dissed her on her own radio show. I wonder what that did to her self-esteem. If I was in a studio audience, I'd say, how many people think that raised Kate's self-esteem? No hands would go up. I'd say, how many people think that might have made her self-esteem go down? You know, a lot of hands would go up, and I'd say, you just failed the first pop quiz on event plus response equals outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not what Jack says to Kate. It's what Kate says to Kate when Jack stops talking.
Mm-hmm.
She could have said, my God, how did he figure it out so fast? We've only been on the air for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, your self-esteem would go down. Or you could say, Jack's just using me as an example, and he knew he could do that because I have high self-esteem and I'm a coach. And, or he might even say, you know, hey, you know, he's looking at me, thinking about me and everything, and he just wants to focus on me and bring me into the conversation. And maybe he even has a little crush on me already. How do I know? The point being that it's you that determines how you feel, not what I say.
Right.
When an actor goes to an interview, they can't say, well, the interview made me miserable, or they turned me down, or they made me, you know, they ticked me off, or they ruined my day. No. You ruin your day by what you say to yourself about what happened. Nobody can ruin your day. Nobody
mm-hmm.
can make you feel bad.
I agree with that.
You know, you make yourself feel bad by what interpretation you put on the event. I'll just say one last thing, and then we'll move on. But if, let's say that your husband forgets your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, wow, my husband forgot my birthday. That means he doesn't love me. Then you're going to feel bad. Or you could say, somebody who loves me forgot my birthday. That creates a whole different outcome. Now you're concerned about your husband, and you're in a state of love rather than in a state of feeling rejected. Same event, different interpretation,
mm-hmm.
different outcome. And we're in charge of our interpretation.
Right. And that's the filters that we see our life through. And I do know that we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are.
That's right.
And with that in mind, that pretty much sums up what you just said. And, you know, we're all meaning-making machines. And you know, we also have hair triggers sometimes when we're stressed out and having a bad day, or I don't like to even say the words bad day because I don't believe in them. And some people, you know, they start out the day, they stub their toe, and they just say they surrender to the whole day being like that when they don't have to. They can say, oh, I stubbed my toe, that doesn't mean anything, and, you know, go out and have a great day. So it's all in perception and perspective. And what I'd like to ask you, with that in mind, Jack, about perspective and filters and how we're seeing the world. What do you do when you've got so much going on that just to keep up with your daily life, it takes 18 hours out of your day? How in the world did you make time to write your book? I know it took 18 months, and I know you stayed up all night sometimes. And what if somebody has a family or a baby they got to get up and, you know, make breakfast for, or children or something? How would you coach them to go about finding that extra few minutes here and there to create their dream?
Well, listen, everyone's at different stages of their life. And, you know, when I had two kids that were 2 and 4 years old and starting my business and I wasn't well known yet and I had a lot to do to get the plane off the ground, that old idea of you're going down the runway with a plane, takes a lot of jet fuel to get that plane off the runway. Once you get up to 35,000 feet, it doesn't take that much fuel to keep you moving forward. So there's a lot that a lot of people are struggling with, and many of us have, you know, ailing parents, and we're dealing with that, and we've got jobs, and maybe we've got a husband that's out of work, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So the trick is you got to handle the things you got to handle. There's no question. You got to feed yourself and your family and clean the house and do all that stuff. The problem is that most people don't realize how much time they waste, even people that are super busy. The average amount of television watching in America is 6 hours a day. For those that are the busy people, it's about 3 hours a day. Mm. If you can just cut out 1 hour of television a day, I love the math on this. Cut out 1 hour of television, gives you 365 extra hours a year. Mm. Divide that by a 40-hour work week, that's almost 2.5 months of 40-hour work weeks. So you can get a lot of done in 2.5 months. So when I wrote my first Chicken Soup book, I was a full-time speaker. I was my son was only a couple years old, and I was running around. This is my last son, who's now 18, but I was running around doing seminars, you know, making sure I had enough money to keep my other kids in college and so forth. And what I did was I took an hour every night, and after my wife had gone to bed, and I would stay up, and I would write. And I made a commitment that I was going to write 2 stories a week. And as I did that, at the end of a year, I'd have 100 stories, which is what I did. And as a result of that, you know, we finished the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book, got that out there. Now, when that book took off and I started to make money from it, then I could take more time off from my speaking and focus more on my books. But there's that time when you start, you've got to sacrifice. You have to find the time. Most of us, and you know, we need 8 hours of sleep, most of us, but can you get by on 7? Can you get by on 6? Can you get by on a little? Sure. And if you took 1 hour a day, my ex-wife, who's the mother of my, you know, one of my sons, a beautiful woman, is MFCC, the Marriage Family Child Counselor. Mm-hmm. And we moved to we're living down in Mar Vista in L.A. at the time. I live in Santa Barbara now. And here we've got a new son. So he's like, you know, just a couple months old. And she decides to go back to school and get her MFCC in California. She was licensed in Massachusetts, but not California. She had to take some more courses. So she's now getting up in the morning before he gets up, studying, doing breast pumping, so there's milk to feed him during the day. Mm-hmm. She goes off to class. We had a babysitter-type person in the neighborhood that fed him during the day. She comes home, feeds him again, breast pumps some more, studies while she's breastfeeding him, puts him to bed, studies for another hour or two, and goes to bed. You know how tiring it is when you're breastfeeding a baby.
Yeah.
And she did that for a year and a half. And then got her MFCC degree from a university out in Pasadena, and then went and got 200 hours of supervision while this was still going on. So if my wife can do that, anybody can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that's hard, think of this. 4 women in the Cabrini Green Projects in Chicago. This is the worst housing slum in America, in my opinion. And I did a little seminar for some people there that were on welfare. And these women decided they were going to get out of the ghetto. And so they said, well, how do we do it? We don't have any degrees. We don't have child care. We've all got children. What they came up with was on Monday and Wednesday and Friday, one woman would take all the other kids. And then on Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday, the other woman would take the kids. So they traded babysitting, basically, and child care. And then they went off and got their GEDs. Then they went to community college and got an AA degree. And then they got jobs, and they got out of there. Now, it took them 3 years to do it. But did they get it done? Absolutely. And if you think you've got problems, try having 5 kids and no husband and living in the Cabrini Green on welfare. Mm-hmm. It just proves you can do anything if you set your mind to it.
Right, right. I know my mom had seven kids and raised us pretty much on her own, and I don't know how she did it. And, you know, had she heard some of the things you have to say, it most likely would have made a big difference for her. She just didn't know what her options were.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people in those socioeconomical conditions don't know that they have other options.
Yeah.
So for you to take the time to go there and speak to them was really wonderful of you
yeah.
to do.
Well, one of my students went home. This woman took one of my workshops. She goes home. She says to her family, look, I realize I have dreams and I'm not pursuing them, and this isn't working for me. And so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to teach all of you how to do your own laundry, because I'm not doing laundry anymore. I'm doing my own. You do yours. I'm going to have two classes, Monday at 3 o'clock after school and Tuesday at 7 p.m., and I'm going to show you how to use the washer and dryer. Show up or you're going to have dirty clothes.
Hmm.
And she said, what we're going to do now is I'm going to cook meals twice a week, and then everyone else is going to cook a meal once a week. She had three kids and a husband or something like that. And she said, this is how it's going to work. And she said, I'll do cooking classes if you want, and some nights we're probably going to eat spaghetti and meatballs that are out of a can because that's what Mary's going to cook over here. Or, you know, she'll make boil up some spaghetti noodles and throw some sauce on it. Doesn't matter. I'm only cooking twice a week. If you want some cooking lessons, you can let me know. I'll work on that with you. And she went off and started going back to school, got a degree, and then she went on and started her own company, and she did training, like you're doing coaching, et cetera. You have to make some decisions. And were her kids mad at her? Absolutely. We got the worst mom in the world. Did they rebel? Did they wear dirty clothes for a week to try to make her feel guilty? Did they make the worst meals on the planet thinking that would get her to change?
Uh-huh.
You bet. But did she give into it? No. And so, you know, you've got to give up your guilt. You know, I call it neurotic guilt. There are certain things you don't want to do, like, you know, there are all kinds of laws you don't want to break and things like that. But you do want to stretch out and not let guilt run you, because if you let other people make you feel guilty, you're now a victim. You'll never be independent. You've got to say, here, this is what I'm going to do. This is fair. We're going to set it up, and then they're going to try to manipulate you out of it. Don't buy into it.
I love that you just said that, because there is such a thing as neurotic guilt, and I think that I had a lot of it in my life, and I used to wake up in the morning and even feel guilty for feeling joyful. And it's because, you know, there's so many other people suffering, and the minute I gave up the neurotic guilt, the more power I had. So,
yeah.
You know, and you don't get points in heaven for having neurotic guilt. You just don't. And I believe martyrdom is overrated, and it doesn't really help anybody.
Well, I agree with you. One thing that I say is you can never suffer enough to end all the suffering for other people. You can never get poor enough to end poverty in the world. And you can never get sick enough to make other people healthy. So the best thing you can do is be a model of joy, a model of abundance, a model of wealth. Not that you want to be the kind of greed that's, you know, toppling Wall Street right now. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
What people are doing there, because they're not really adding any value.
Mm-hmm.
They're just taking money out, siphoning it out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you can be really abundant and help other people go, wow, that's possible. And you
mm-hmm.
can be vibrantly healthy. And people go, hey, I want to be healthy like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't walk through the mall. I mean, some people do. I actually found this out. But, you know, if you see an old person with a walker in the mall,
mm-hmm.
you don't slow down just so they feel less, you know, crippled in their old age. You just live your life.
Mm-hmm.
And to the level you do that, then other people get inspired and you can teach those people. I always say, be a student to those above you, a fellow traveler to those on the same level, and a teacher to those below you who are willing to learn.
Mm.
And if you do that, then you don't have to feel guilty about anything.
I totally agree with that. And I just want to say hello to Dr. John Holland if he's listening. I don't know if you remember him. He wrote a couple of, I think, three chapters in Chicken Soup for the Chiropractic Soul.
Uh-huh, I do remember.
And do you remember Dr. John Holland?
I remember the stories. I don't.
Yes. Oh, awesome man. He's my chiropractor. He's part of the reason that I learned how to begin self-care. And I had some issues in my tissues, and he helped me get rid of them. And had I not read the book Chicken Soup for the Chiropractic Soul, I would not have known all of the wonderful things that that kind of chiropractic, I believe it's called network chiropractic,
yes.
Where the, you know, what the chiropractors do is they facilitate the body to heal itself,
mm-hmm.
because the body is designed to heal itself. And what the chiropractors do is help the patient, the client, believe that they can heal their own body, and therefore they do. Because what you think about, you bring about, and their hands are quite skilled. And Dr. DeMartini also trained Dr. John Holland. So I just love the connection here. And also my fiance is John Steller, who helped launch The Secret.
Oh, yeah, he was doing all the PR for us then.
Yep. And I'm now VP of Visionary Talent at Steller, as one of the other hats that I wear. So I'm one of those people who, use about 18 hours of the day just to get through the day and doing all the things that I'm doing. So, you know, getting the books written and doing all those wonderful things in addition to all of that are a challenge, and they're a delicious challenge, and I'm getting them done one sentence at a time. And all the things that you've said about, you know, being a single mom when I was an actress in Los Angeles for 15 years, and getting us both to our auditions and our bookings, and being a manager for both he and I did have to teach him how to do his own laundry and cook his own food. And he's quite self-sufficient today because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I happen to know that that all works. So the Chicken Soup for the Soul franchise, I believe you've got a Chicken Soup for the Soul for just about everything, don't you, by now?
Yeah, we're working on Rhode Island. We figure when we get there, we're done. No, I'm kidding. No, but we have done Chicken Soup for the Military Wives Soul, for the
uh-huh.
Cat Lover Soul, the Dog Lover Soul, the NASCAR Fan Soul. All I think we have about 19 books, and preteen, and Kid Soul, and Girl Soul, and Mother and Son Soul. And you know, it's funny, every time you think you've kind of reached an end, someone comes up with a new category of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, my God, there's a whole world. I mean, we even did a thing, like you mentioned Chiropractor Soul, we did Dennis Soul, multi-level marketing, and even the Hallmark approaches about doing Christmas ornament collector soul.
Wonderful.
How many people collect Christmas ornaments? Millions, you know, who
wow.
knows? And so it's really exciting to be able to find stories. When we did NASCAR, I thought, come on, guys, NASCAR soul, are you kidding me? And they said no, and we started looking at the stories, all these NASCAR drivers and the
mm-hmm.
great philanthropic things they do and the heroic things you have to do to overcome your fear when you're driving. Every arena
mm-hmm.
you can think of, you
mm-hmm.
know, has heroic stories.
Right.
And we are a nation right now in need of more heroic models.
Yes.
So that people can come forward. And let me just share something with you that I learned this last week that's new for me, and it
okay.
builds on something I do in my book, The Success Principles, where we talk about it's important to know your purpose. And I found a new technique for getting in touch with your purpose, which I really love. And it goes like this. What you do is you take a piece of paper, and you, like an 8.5 by 11, just put a big line right down the middle of it. On the right-hand side, you put all the things that make you come alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like for me, it's teaching, doing interviews like this with you,
mm-hmm.
Coaching, writing a book, running a seminar, facilitating, creating new products, being part of solving a big problem, hanging out with conscious people, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you, on the other side of the paper, you put all those things that absolutely, when you see them on television or people talk about them, or you see them in life, you either become enraged or you shut down, you know, you numb out, you withdraw, you go away from it, you know, you have to turn the TV off, or you just can't participate in that conversation. And so for me, on that side of the column were things like insensitivity, genocide, unfairness, racism, keeping people living in fear, manipulating people, so on and so forth. Now what you do is you say, okay, how can I use the things that make me alive on the right-hand side of the page to go and solve some of those problems on the left-hand side of the page? See, everyone has some experience in life where some pain occurred, something that they can't handle. Like for my wife, if you ask her what are the things that drive her crazy or numb her out, it's like when she sees a thing on television where a baby died because the mom left it in the car when she went into the supermarket on a hot day. Or these puppy mills where the dogs can't even turn around.
Mm.
We have a new law, you know, on a new initiative in the California voting this year about animal rights where you can't have cages that are so small that the bird can't extend its wings fully or an animal can't stand up and move around. And it's inhumane. Well, when you look at that, what has her life been about? It's about getting people outdoors, stretching them. She's a yoga instructor. She's been a phys ed teacher. She's been a ski instructor. She's taught, you know, aerobics and so on and so forth. And it's like getting people into movement, getting them untrapped. So she's using that to help people break out of their own inner prison,
mm-hmm.
their own inner trappedness. So for a lot of people, the woman that created Mothers Against Drunk Driving,
mm-hmm.
you know, she lost a daughter. She turned it into a national campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And if we find that wound, that place where we've been wounded, or the thing that we shut down because we haven't healed it because it's in our shadow, it's incomplete,
mm-hmm.
and we use the things that make us alive, like writing poetry or acting. I mean, look at all the actors that have used their acting, like Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio and George Clooney, to make statements in the world about things they care deeply about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't do that in every single movie, but you can do it a lot. Oliver Stone as a director, etc. So that's where we find our purpose, is the confluence between that which makes us feel alive and that which makes us want to shut down and die.
Mm.
And then we can help other people not die in those areas by the aliveness that we get in our art or our craft.
Very well said. Very well said. And I'm sure the people listening right now were taking some copious, ferocious notes. That's a really wonderful way to discover your purpose, because truly, when you do discover your purpose, the universe shows up to support it every time, and your physical needs will be provided for, because you're living your purpose and you're vibrating who you really are. And you know, I believe that the journey of our lifetime is to get back to our divinity, because we're born absolutely perfectly whole. And, you know, culture and society and surroundings and environment tend to put upon us all kinds of ideas that are not our own. And I also believe that we're all born knowing all there is to know, that we just forget that we know it. And then when people like you come along and other great teachers, they help us remember the things that we forgot that we know. And, you know, when it resonates inside of us like a giant bell ringing, we listen and we shift our lives and our perspectives and take those filters off and live more freely. And without people like you and other great teachers that we have, it would be like swimming in mud. We wouldn't find our direction, and we're all put here to help point the way for one another. And it doesn't matter if it's somebody working at a coffee shop or a dry cleaner. You know, it's their perspective on, are they being of service and how are they being of service? And everybody can be of service right where they are right now without doing anything except changing their mindset to being of service.
It's so true. And, you know, one of the things I write about in the Success Principles book is this idea of, you know, in The Secret, we see a lot of people coming up to me, you know, after they've watched the movie 25 times, and they'll say something like, you know, well, I have watched the movie 25 times, and I still haven't got my perfect role, or I still haven't made my $1 million, or I haven't attracted my perfect soulmate. And one of the things we know is that when you are aligned with your purpose and not coming out of ego, the law of attraction works at a much faster rate. Like, I'll take people up on stage, and I'll say, okay, let's say an actor, since we're talking a lot about people in Hollywood. And I'll say, okay, I think about what you'd like. Maybe there's a certain role you want to get, or there's a certain screenplay you love, you'd like to get that part, or you've written one, or whatever. Think about getting that goal, and think about only how it's going to serve you. You know, you're going to make money, you're going to get the car, you're going to get in People magazine, whatever. And I muscle test their arm. I'll have their arm out to the side, and their arm goes weak when they think about how it's only going to serve them. I said, keep the same goal. You want the same role, you want the same screenplay to get bought up, whatever it is. Put your arm up, but this time I want you to think how it's going to serve humanity, how it's going to serve all the people that are in that movie, and they're all going to, you know, they're going to make money, and the people out in the audience are going to get entertained and uplifted or thrilled or whatever the focus of that movie is. Then their arm is absolutely strong.
Mm-hmm.
See, the body is always telling us the thing we should be doing. So when we're focused on service and we're focused on a higher purpose than our own ego needs being fulfilled, then we're actually doing that which we were born to do, which is to express ourselves fully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Bernard Shaw saying, I want to be fully used up before I die. I'm no brief candle. I want to be a torch that's totally burned out at the end of my life. And so each of us, if we align with our purpose and get in touch with what that is, and then approach it from a place of serving humanity. And, you know, one of the ways to get in touch with purpose is, what do you love? I mean, most people in acting love it. You know, there's a lot of out-of-work actors. You got to really love the craft to stay in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I forget what percent, like 15% of actors in Hollywood, you know, are working at any time or get a role in a year. I forget the exact statistic. But the reality is, you got to love the craft. And if you love the craft and you do it with people you love and you do it out of love and you commit to it and you don't give up and you persevere and you use the law of attraction and you see yourself in that role you want, you see yourself, you know, getting the results you want, visualizing it, feeling the feelings. If you do that on a daily basis, you know, you do it, and here's something critical that most people don't know, and I write about briefly in the book, but I'll expound on it here, is that most people, when they do their visualization, here's the mistake they make. It's based on a piece of research from NASA, which is our, you know, National Aeronautic Space Agency. They took astronauts, and they had them wear convex lens goggles for 30 days. Convex lens goggles make your world appear upside down. They had to wear them 24 hours a day.
Right.
They were trying to see if they would become disoriented when they were in outer space, when there's no gravity, and how would they handle disorientation. Well, what they found, they didn't expect to find, was 25 to 30 days into the experiment, every one of the astronauts, their brain flip the image right side up again that they were seeing upside down through the lenses.
Hmm.
So we know that it takes about 25 to 30 days of uninterrupted focus on a goal, on a vision, on an affirmation, on visualization, in order to bring that true. Because what they found was that if they took the glasses off on day 15, they did this with a secondary group, take the goggles off, put them on again one day later, it didn't take another 14 or 15 days. It took another 25 to 30 days, meaning that when you're doing these spiritual disciplines, this visioning work, et cetera, you know, and you look at the people that do it, that write about it, like Jim Carrey and people like that, and they've been so successful with these techniques,
mm-hmm.
what happens is they do it every single day. And if you do it for 7 days and miss a day and do it for 5 days and then miss a day and do it for 7 days and miss a day, it's not going to work. So it requires that daily discipline for the first 30 days. After that, then you can reinforce it sporadically. But that's why when people are passionate, they say things like, you know, I can see this so bad, I can taste it, and they're like divinely obsessed, it's all they'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's with chicken soup. That's all I would talk about for months. Well, 30 days was a breeze because I was in touch with my passion.
Mm-hmm.
I could not focus on it.
Hmm. I would like to see in the franchise, now, stay with me here, the book Chicken Soup for Jack Canfield's Soul. I would like to read that book. I think you should make that book.
Well, I think I kind of dig with the success principles. I think there's a lot of...
Yeah. It's got a lot of that in it. And just the chicken soup for Jack Canfield's soul would just be so cute. So great. I think a lot of people would want to buy that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I know I would. And, you know, it's people who do such great good in the world should be paid very handsomely. And, you know, watching The Secret as many times as I did. And you know what's really funny, Jack, is the way that I met John Steller, my cinder fella, is through The Secret. And it's not what you think. I didn't sit around visualizing. I spent a couple of years listening to your CDs and reading your books and getting myself in order and learning to be my own beloved. Because, you know, I've got a couple of husbands, and I knew that I was bringing my part of that relationship to the scene when I got involved with somebody, and I knew that if it didn't work out, it was half my fault or half my doings, and I wanted to find out what that half was. So I spent 2 years just becoming my own beloved and learning to love myself moment by moment by moment by moment, and it literally turned my life around. And if I had only spent the rest of my life, I'm 52 now, and if I'd spent the rest of my life without a physical mate, I would have been fine with that, because I've experienced a lot of things, and I just really love being of service any way that I can, through speaking and coaching and writing and radio show and being a talent manager and making a difference in the little ways that I do. That's my favorite thing to do in life. And that was going to be my significant other, was just making a difference. But I also tied up my camel, as Dan Millman says. He says you can pray to Allah, but you need to also tie up your camel. So knowing that I didn't care if I ever had a physical relationship again, I just was enjoying being with my friends and my family and my colleagues. I still went to Macy's and bought a men's velour Tommy Hilfiger robe, navy blue with matching shoes, house slippers, and I spent a month checking out the fragrances there at Macy's until I found the perfect fragrance I wanted my physical mate to smell like, if I ever had one. And I put the robe in my closet, the slippers under my bed, and I spritzed that cologne every night for a year before I went to sleep. And I met John Steller by way of having Mike Dooley on my radio show, and then he came to Los Angeles, invited me to a seminar. I have a client named Tracy Doherty who made Kukui nuts for me with a lovely lapis lazuli pendant on the bottom. And I walk into Mike Dooley's seminar, and I've been wearing those Kukui nuts for a year, and I see a person wearing Kukui nuts. So not caring if I ever met another man or for romantic purposes or whatever, it was very out of character for me to walk up to this man and say, "Hi, my name's Kate Romero, and I must know your name. You're wearing Kukui nuts." He said, "Hi, I'm John, and have you been to the Billionaire Boot Camp?" And I said, "What's that?" And the conversation was pretty much over after that, because I didn't know what that was, and he got his Kukui nuts at the Billionaire Boot Camp with Chris Howard. So next morning, I had breakfast with Mike Dooley, And I said, how do I get a hold of Rhonda Byrne to be on my radio show? I don't know if she's doing media, but if she is, I really want to try because Spiritual Hollywood's the perfect combination, and I really would love to have her on my show. And he said, oh, I don't know. She's got a publicist. Call Joe Vitale's secretary, Suzanne Byrne, and ask her for the information. She'll give it to you. So I got home from the breakfast. I called Suzanne. She gave me the information. The next morning, I cold called the number. I said, hi, I'm Katie Romero, talk show host of Spiritual Hollywood. I just had Mike Dooley on my show. And before I could say anything else, that person on the phone said, well, I was just at Mike Dooley's seminar on Sunday. I said, oh, you might have seen me. I was wearing a brown beret. He goes, yeah, I saw you. I was the guy in the cuckooey nuts. And when it became appropriate to do so, when he finally tried on the robe and slippers, they were a perfect fit, and he's been through two bottles of that Givenchy cologne. So it's, you know, I found my cinder fella, and I really wasn't looking.
That's fabulous.
So we met through the secret, and Reverend Michael Beckwith will be marrying us at Agape.
I just gave a seminar at Agape on Sunday. So.
Did you really?
Yeah, I'm a part of a group called the Pachamama Alliance.
Right.
It's a group that's dedicated to creating an environmentally sustainable, socially just.
You were there last Sunday?
Fulfilling human presence on Earth. Yeah, I attended the first two sessions of church, and then we gave a seminar from 3 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the.
Oh, we would have missed you anyway. Last Sunday was the first Sunday we've missed in a long time because we went to Disneyland the day before and ran around for 12 hours to the point that we were all just terminally exhausted and didn't go. But we would have missed you because we go to the 11 o'clock service. But how wonderful you were there.
Yeah, now Michael's a good friend of mine ever since, way before The Secret, but yes.
That's wonderful. Yeah, there's a picture in John's office of all of you together.
Yeah.
Just before you went on the Oprah show.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know it was, and I feel like I was a part of it. Even though I wasn't there, I was there. And I've had on my guardianangelmanagement.com website the secret logo since long before I met John, and it's just all so perfect. And I just want everybody to know that the success principles did help me align myself to become my own beloved, and that's without ego at all. That's just really the only way you can become an instrument of God, higher power, creator, any of that, is to learn to become your own beloved and to learn to honor and love yourself so you feel worthy enough to attract the abundance that you seek. And that's what you'll get by going to Jack's website, thesuccessprinciples.com, and do yourself a great favor and get busy reading what's there. Get the CDs. Get the book. You know, find some way to get this into your system. Saturate yourself with this, and I guarantee you, from experience, I can tell you that 2 years of it did miracles for me, just miracles. I'm happier than I've ever been. I'm healthier than I've ever been. I think I even look better than I ever have. It's just amazing what can happen when you shift your perspective, and you know that when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, right, Jack?
That's exactly right. You know.
Yeah, and also, the thing that you seek is also seeking you. And I learned that. And if you could elaborate on that just a little bit, Jack, if you happen to agree with that concept, that the thing you seek is also seeking you.
Yeah, there's a harmonic resonance in the universe of things that are aligned with each other, that are meant to be in relationship to each other to accomplish certain things that want to be accomplished by the evolution of spirit. And so the people that you're wanting to work with are also looking for you, assuming you are in the same vibrational alignment with each other. And if you really tune into your essence, if you get into meditation, if you focus on your purpose, then the things you want are out there. They're meant to be for you. You're in the things you naturally want are the things you're supposed to be doing in life. You are programmed, if you will. There's a blueprint inside you that says, hey, I'm only happy when I'm acting, or I'm only happy when I'm singing. I mean, I've got three children. They're all in the arts from 33 down to 18. And they're only happy when they're doing certain things, and they've been given the talent for that. That's the blueprint of what they're supposed to express and bring into the world. And when they don't fight that, you know, when they're not paddling upstream, as we say, when they just get in the canoe and go downstream, then what happens is life gets much more easy. I mean, a book I'm working on right now is called Effortless Success, and it's about really cooperating with this grand design that you're part of. There is this dream of evolution, and you're part of it. You were born not, you know, as some little clod of dirt on the earth, but you're part of this grand design that's unfolding. And if you cooperate by being yourself, That's that part about loving yourself. Instead of trying to be what you're not, or mm-hmm. trying to manipulate other people, but just really to be so focused on you and your dream, and then what you want actually will flow into your life. Just to give you an example, I decided I wanted to go to the Olympics in China, and I don't know anyone in China, and so on and so forth. But I thought, in my rational mind, I do know one person who works for Nike. I thought maybe I can get tickets that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was I made that commitment. I wanted to go to the Olympics in China. And about 2 weeks later, I'm giving a talk to a huge multi-level marketing company, 7,000 people in the audience in Las Vegas. And right before I'm supposed to go on, I'm in the back of the room putting on my wireless mic, and this Chinese guy walks over toward me. He says, you Jack Canfield? I said, yeah. He said, have you ever spoken in China? I said, no. He said, I want you to come to China and speak to my multi-level marketing group that I have over there. I said, great, I'd love to do that. I said, but what I really want to do is go to the Olympics. He said, oh, no problem. My brother's on the Olympic planning committee in China. We can make that happen. Now, that was 2 weeks after I set that goal.
Wow.
I wasn't out there purposely trying to do anything to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was in the flow and my desire to go there was aligned with something else, which was helping him develop his business in China, he was attracted to me to help him do what he wanted to do. And I was there being attracted into the space where he was so that he could help me do what I wanted to do.
And you were hootless about it.
I was.
Yes. That really matters a lot. When I was hootless about this relationship, let me tell you, it made all the difference.
Yeah, it's the case, I'm sure your listeners know from now, they talk to you, but meaning you don't give a hoot, you're not attached, you've released it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Michael Beckwith, this week, talked about it in his church, the difference between detachment and non-attachment. Detachment means I don't care. I don't feel like it, I don't care. Non-attachment means I'm going to focus on it, I'm going to put energy on it, but I'm not attached to the outcome. If it doesn't happen, then I know that there's something better in store, and that wasn't how it was supposed to turn out.
Yep. I think we have a caller. Who's there? Hey, guess what, Jack? We've gone over the hour, and I knew that this hour would fly by so fast, like 15 minutes, mm-hmm. and it did. I want to thank you so very much for making time to be on our show. It was absolutely a joy.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I know the listeners loved it, and I just want to encourage everyone to stand up really tall, take a deep breath, and love yourselves, and remember the last six letters in attraction are action, so create the life that you can love and be your own best friend. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks again, Jack, and have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.